Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews.
Welcome back to Thinking It Through, and we are continuing with our relevant study of the Book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature, the kind of literary genre that surfaces when the people of God, the faith community, face trials and tribulation at the hands of secular kingdoms and forces. It is a revelation of the ultimate triumph of God's kingdom over all the kingdoms of men, and in spite of the fierceness of the world's empires, they will be subdued by the awesome power of God's reign over the hearts of men. Here is Dr. Gregory Donation, resident minister at Juvenati Mission, in part 7 of Facing the Furnace.
Hi folks, it's me again with the Book of Daniel. Thank you for joining me. We are enjoying these fireside chats as we delve into this amazing book. Carrying on from where we left off last time, just want to say a word or two about the partitioning of this book again, the Book of Daniel. Part 1, in case you missed it, would be right from the very first verse in chapter 1, going through to chapter 2, verse 4a. Now, how we know that this is part 1 is because from verse 1 to chapter 2, verse 4a, we have the Hebrew text. It's written in Hebrew. And as we said, it's material that covers matters relating to the Jews. It's written about the Jews, and it gives us a little bit of history introducing this book. So part one is Hebrew, Hebrew language, Hebrew text, chapter 1, verse 1 to chapter 2, verse 4a. You can mark it like that in your scriptures. When we come to part 2, everything changes. Daniel 2, verse 4b to 7, verse 28 is written in Aramaic. So you will see in chapter 2, when these enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers came in and stood before the king, he said, "I have a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic. And there you see, the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic. That moved over to the colloquial language in Aramaic. And from that verse, "O king, live forever," it's all in Aramaic, all the way until you come to the end of chapter 7. So chapter 7, the end, concludes the text that is in Aramaic. And that ends up with, "This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts, and my face turned pale, but I kept the matter to myself." So the reason why it's in Aramaic is because it really covers the history of the Gentiles. One could say it is the time of the Gentiles. And that is also brought out in the New Testament, where it speaks about the time of the Gentiles. When that is completed, then the next things will happen. So when you come to chapter 8 now, verse 1 says, "In the third year of King Belshazzar's reign, I, Daniel, had a vision." That's all in Hebrew now. So he's gone back to Hebrew. And from that all the way to chapter 12, verse 13, it's history about the Jews. It's written about the Jews. It's maybe highlighting the plans that God has for Israel. So part 1, the beginning, starts off with the history of the Jews. Part 3, which is back in Hebrew again, reveals to us what God's plans are for Israel. So you have the history and you have the unfolding of his will later on. And in the middle, sandwiched between these two Hebrew texts, would be the Aramaic, because it's telling us graphically that this is really all about the heathen. Now, when we partition the book, and we have to do that because it's apocalyptic literature, it facilitates the understanding of this book. You will have chapter 1, And chapter 1 is Daniel taking a stand against the pagan and heathen influences. He wants to be uncompromising in his commitment to God. In the face of an intense cultural challenge, he rises to the occasion and fearlessly says, I cannot be contaminated. I will not allow myself to be contaminated. That's the content of chapter 1. And you will see that as they have been selected for service, they are recruited, and then they're supposed to undergo the training before they can enter civil service. But that whole chapter is embroiled in the controversy of to what extent can we go along with a pagan practice. Chapter 2, of course, is Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Daniel's interpretation of that dream. That has got certain consequences, because then in chapter 3 you have the image of gold that they are supposed to bow before when the music starts, and the three friends of Daniel, they refuse to do that, and then they face the fiery furnace. There will be consequences to your bold stand that you take, your uncompromising position that you have for the kingdom. So, you have chapter 1, Daniel taking a stand. Chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Chapter 3, the image of gold that they have to bow before, but they refuse to do that, and the consequences will be you're thrown into the fiery furnace. What was so amazing, what was so outstanding about that particular situation is that they answered the king and said, King, the God that we serve will be able to save us from the fiery furnace. But even if he doesn't, now that's the important part, even if he doesn't, we want you to know, O king, that we will not bow to these gods. They will be prepared to pay the price. Now, when you come to chapter 4, you have Nebuchadnezzar's second dream, and again you have Daniel's interpretation, and then the dream is actually fulfilled. And you know what the consequences of that was. Now you come to chapter 5. Belshazzar is dining with all his officials, and all of a sudden, in the middle of all that, there's this hand that appears and begins to write on the wall, Mene, Mene, Tikal, Upharsin. You have been weighed and found wanting. That was Daniel's interpretation, and the writing is fulfilled. So you look at chapter 4 and chapter 5, they run parallel. You have Nebuchadnezzar's dream, Daniel interpreting the dream, and the dream is fulfilled. Chapter 5, you have Belshazzar's handwriting, the hand that writes on the wall, a supernatural encounter. You have Daniel's interpretation, and that writing is fulfilled. God is sovereign over the affairs of men. Then you have chapter 6, the decree of Darius. And as a result of that decree, that no one is supposed to pray to any god except the king, you know, Daniel goes, opens the windows, and visibly, not in secret, not quietly, but openly, raises his hands to heaven in praise, and of course he's seen. And now, because this decree is the decree of the Medes and the Persians and can't be changed, it's now obligatory for him to be thrown into the lion's den. And of course, not one of the lions sets a fang on him. He's delivered from that den. And you know, what was so interesting about that was the next day, after he had been put in the den, the king ran out shouting, Daniel, Daniel, was the God that you serve able to save you from the lion's mouth? Now, what was wrong with this king? Was he crazy? How do you go calling out to somebody who's been devoured by the lions? There should be nothing left of them. Was he really expecting an answer? Why did he go out there shouting? Surely by that time, the lions would have made a meal of Daniel, if all things were normal. What made the king run out? he ran out there because he realized that the God of Daniel is so great that the chances are Daniel would have survived. It showed that he had faith in the God of Israel. He had the full expectation that Daniel would still be alive. Otherwise, you'll be an idiot. You look like a fool if you run out there in front of your men. What's this king doing, shouting like this? Doesn't he know that the lions would have finished Daniel? No, Daniel's God was vindicated, and it was such a powerful testimony. It shed so much light in that hour of trial and hour of great darkness. Daniel was delivered. Now, chapter 7, we again have a dream from Daniel. And in this dream, there are four beasts that appear, and he gives that interpretation. Then that is followed by chapter 8, where Daniel has another vision. Well, the first is a dream, but this is now a vision, where there's a ram and a goat, and he gives the interpretation. It's important to see the pattern. Chapter 7, chapter 8, and chapter 9, you have these items that appear, Daniel's dream, Daniel's vision. In chapter 9, Jeremiah's prophecy. In Daniel's dream, you have four beasts. In Daniel's vision, you have the ram and the goat. In Jeremiah's prophecy, it's followed by Daniel's prayer and an interpretation. So in each one of those instances, there is an interpretation. So in chapter 10, you have Daniel's second vision, and it's a vision of a great war, and at the root of it is spiritual warfare unfolding. Chapter 11 covers the geopolitical intrigue, the cloak and dagger drama that unfolds, the international conspiracies, the things that you can see. This is the turmoil and the trouble amongst the nations. And from this geopolitical intrigue, you have a superpower emerging that's like a world empire. And then chapter 12, which concludes everything, you have the third vision of Daniel, which refers to distress and refers to ultimately the deliverance of God's people and his inheritance. So look at the structure. You will see chapter 8, you have Daniel's first vision. Chapter 10, Daniel's second vision. Chapter 12, Daniel's third vision. And each one of those visions builds the one on the other, and it unfolds God's purpose and God's plans, not only with his own people, but as his sovereign, it shows his total geopolitical control of all these events. It's happening exactly as he intended it to happen. Now, next time, we would have a look at this scenario from a different perspective. From me, Greg Donation, it's goodbye and God bless until next time.
And that was Dr. Gregory Donation in part 7 of Facing the Furnace, a relevant study of the Book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature. If you have any questions about the Book of Daniel, send it to our email address that will be given at the end of the program. Join us again, same time tomorrow for part 8.
If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.